Ladies and gentlemen, again, the obligatory introduction on a program of this sort. It's being recorded at another time in another place, because right now, as you hear this, I am someplace where logistics would not allow me. The cost would be prohibitive, and even if it weren't, I'd be having dinner right now. And I wouldn't, as much as I love you, the radio audience, I love my dinner more. So anyway, this program is being recorded at another time, so don't look for any topical references to anything that went on this week. And you notice I'm not making any in this announcement. I'm being very rigorous in avoiding those kinds of references because they could just turn around and bite you. So that being said, this is a year, this was a year, soon was, still is, but soon to be a was, a year that, unlike many, unlike most, neatly bifurcated itself in terms of the events of the year and the comedy material pertaining thereto. Neatly into two halves before September 11th and, of course, say it with me, after. And so in reviewing the year, we'll observe that that protocol. This week's broadcast is dedicated to looking back at the events of the year 2001 before September 11th. So welcome to part one of A Year in Rebuke on Hello, Welcome to the Show.
Something. The Chappaqua Years.
Nah, I think the picture of me and Arafat doesn't work over the fireplace. What do you think?
Me? Mm-hmm. I just work here, sir. I'll put it wherever you want.
Yeah. It's so hard for me to get used to the idea that the people around me aren't advisors anymore.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I do happen to be one of the few people I know who made money in the NASDAQ last year.
Maybe between the thing and the thing.
What? The candelabra and the sconce?
Yeah, right. Man, it's a whole new vocabulary. I always thought sconce was what Tony Blair demanded with his tea. Nah, I don't know. That sort of puts the spotlight on the Arafat picture as opposed to putting it into context with the whole peacemaker motif. Man, decorating is harder than it looks.
Well, if nobody else is going to get it, I guess I will.
Man, you got to do everything yourself these days.
Mr. President, I come without entourage.
Man, I wouldn't mind seeing a good-sized entourage right about now. Come on in, Jesse.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah.
I hope I'm not intruding in the nesting process. Setting down roots is the only way to ensure that once planted, you will be fruitful.
Yeah. Now, I'm just trying to finish the unpacking. Ah. Fellas, you can take five, or whatever it is people take these days. Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful house. Beautiful neighborhood.
Yeah.
Any people of color live here?
Actually, I think Puffy Combs' mom lives a couple miles away.
Oh, I pray for that woman.
You think it's a wig?
Platinum hair on her sister? Bet this house on it.
You know, I would never have been following his trial in the old days.
Mm.
I'd have been reading the intelligence reports on the Mideast or
uh-huh.
complaints from commanders in Kosovo.
Sometimes you don't realize how heavy the weight is until you put the burden down.
Hey, man, burden isn't down yet. I can't take a crappy Dale Chihilly glass what's-it without creepy old watermelon Dan Burton threatening to hold hearings and subpoena everybody who's ever held us a fundraiser.
Oh, you love it.
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Lucky I do, because it wouldn't stop regardless, but yeah, I love the game, and they're so damn bad at it.
Uh-huh.
I mean, all right,
we'll reimburse the gifts from the foundation.
Yeah, I saw that.
So we go to the same people who gave us the gifts and say, please, won't you contribute to the foundation? It's just another hoop I gotta jump through.
Yeah, but it sure beats redecorating.
Does it ever. I mean, have you checked out Denise Rich? Man, is she hot. And she writes for Aretha, man, so you got all the soul with about half the back porch.
Yeah.
Anyway, look, what brings you to Chappaqua? I don't think you came for the antique fair down at the high school, did you?
No, sir, I did not. Matter of fact, the only antique I'm interested in right now is me. I've lost my way. The love child story is morphing into a story about the money for the mother. I'm about to walk through the valley of the shadow without a paddle.
Jesse, you gave me some very good advice during the whole Monica thing. Mm-hmm. You remember what it was?
Sold your PepsiCo stock?
That was part of it, but you also said something about responsibility.
I said very often taking the responsibility is the best way of avoiding the blame.
There you go.
Well, Mr. President, at this time, the very time when I ought to be leading the charge against the desire of President Bush to roll everything back, I've got to worry about the danger of being rolled under. This could be my White Waterloo gate.
Jesse, I don't need to tell you that I know how you feel, except for the part about you being African-American, which, especially during Black History Month, I can never know how that feels.
Uh-huh.
But I do know how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from offering you some, let's call it moral support, and some trail mix in the bowl over there,
I'm fine.
What can I do for you, buddy?
Well, so you can't spell triumph without try. So that last part in the list, have they published the final version yet? I mean, is it set in stone?
Oh.
Can there be any addendums submitted? Because,
man, I'm already getting enough heat about the stupid pardons. You know, as far as I'm concerned, everybody can just stay in jail now. Present company accepted, of course.
Well, but that's just it, sir. Hmm? The Mark Rich pardon is the lightning rod. Something filed back there under the J's. That might be an act of stealth kindness, flying way under the radar of reaction.
You're damn good, Jackson. But, you know, even Jack Quinn couldn't get you a pardon now. I mean, I couldn't give one to my best friend at this point, which is not to say that you're not my best friend.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, at this moment...
Well, what answer? What you could do for me is lend your services and your email list to a fundraiser at Madison Square Garden.
Legal fund?
No, sir. I'm going to pay back Operation Push for my foundation. It's a fundraiser to start my foundation.
Jesse, of course you got me. I'd love to play the garden again.
All right, Mr. President, I'll leave you to do your labors such as they are.
Okay, fellas, cigarette break is over. Jesse, you take care of yourself and of whoever else you have to take care of.
Yes, sir, and I'll give your regards to Hillary.
Please do. So look, man, I forgot your name.
I never told you. It's Steve.
Steve, of course. I just wanted to ask you something.
Yeah.
How did you make money in the NASDAQ last year?
No big deal. I fixed up plumbing.
Middle-aged angst. And premature powerlessness. Together, they add up to Clinton something. Moving this fall to Lifetime.
Early in the year, long before he flew to Afghanistan, Dan Rather was the subject of rumors that he was about to be replaced as the anchor of the CBS Evening News because of its perennial third-place finish in the ratings as he approached October, which would have been his... and was, in fact, his 70th birthday. The rumors were that, among others, Tim Russert of NBC had been approached to replace him. It was a bad day at Black Rock.
The president says no budge on the budget. Details at 6. Now back to you, Chuck and Tyra.
So they have no ill will toward McCain. You know, the usual bull... Daniel,
This is a surprise. Brother Plant, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Well,
nothing to thank me for, Brother Rather. I just said hello. Well, something about the way you said it put some berries on the cornflakes. How are you, William? You're looking splendid. Well, if there's anything to this medical science stuff, I should. What brings you to the nation's capital, Daniel? Cherry blossoms are late this year, you know. You know, Brother Plant, I've always said, if we could somehow harness that wit of yours, you know, not defang it, but just slap a saddle on its back and make it safe for strangers, we'd have something pretty special. No, sir, we thought the president's second press conference was a story and a half, so I just slapped on my chaps and rode down here because...
Daniel, the news conference was yesterday. I filed a package on it. You ran it.
Yes, sir. Fine piece of shoe leather journalism.
I guess so, even though I just sat there and took notes.
Yes, but that was my point. To come down here day after and sniff out the mood of the place in the wake of the aftermath.
Daniel, you're here because you wanted to get out of New York.
Brother Plant, you read me like a teleprompter. Yes, sir. Black Rock and West 57th are turning into tabloid gossip pits, and here's a reality check. I happen to hail from the old school. When the anchor becomes the story, then the story is the anchor.
Well, I heard the rumors about Russert.
Oh, listen here, Hoss. Man needs to do what he has to do to get a raise out of General Electric. I can't blame him for starting that rumor any more than the prairie dog can blame Diamondback for eating him.
Well, the prairie dog's not really that vengeful a critter anyway, is it?
No, sir. Good point, and well taken. But let me give it to you, drug cop straight and armadillo hide tough. This hombre is going to be anchoring evening news on his 70th birthday, and you can take that to the bank, sign it over, and get a monster home loan against it.
Well, I think all the stories I read mentioned that, but, you know, that's October, and sweeps month comes right after it, and... You know, November is very pretty somewhere in the world. Besides, Daniel, I remember back after election night, you were the one talking about getting out of here before the Yankee home opener.
Brother Plant, it was the Mets. Well, you're not going to hear it. Nobody from within hailing distance of Brazos County rooting for anybody called Yankee. But seriously, Haas, sure, I was talking about resigning on principle. But that was when I thought they knew they needed me. Now that I've seen how this organization chose to make the kind of responses that would keep this story going longer than a pubic shave at a barber college, I'm going out of CBS News one way only. Boots on and toes tagged.
That's another way of saying dead.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Dan, look, can I be candid with you? Evening News isn't where you want to be anymore. You know what's happening. The Evening News franchise is being devalued by cable, by the internet, by our own people. I mean, you saw Hewitt's suggestion that the three networks collaborate on a single newscast?
Yes, sir. I made note of that. I wonder who he thinks is experienced and talented enough to executive produce that mythical super broadcast.
Exactly, but it's not going to happen.
No, sir, although I must admit it would be a single malt kick to see this particular face on NBC's air as well.
Oh, well.
You know, Brother Hewitt and I are like this.
Still. Well, then, that's where you go, back to 60. I mean, he'd love to have you back, and at your age, you'd young up that place.
Brother Plant, if this was about me, I'd be back to 60 quicker than a fruit fly's love life. But, sir, please, and hear me out. I hope I'm not using your computer.
No, it's fine, Dave.
I just had to finish these promos before we lose the satellite.
No problem. You still write your own promos?
When I'm mad, it relaxes me. But, William, please, you saw those internet suggestions for people to replace me?
Russert, Diane Sawyer.
Did you notice something about them?
Most of them would have to take a salary cut to replace you.
But besides that?
Well, most of them, except for your previously anointed successor, don't work for CBS News.
Bingo and double bingo. I've been bitching for years that this place's bench was weaker than a veal calf in a hailstorm. Now that particular chicken is coming home to roost, and it's not bringing eggs.
Well, it may be bringing ham. Look,
you
Daniel...
You see, here's my problem, Brother Plant. I care too much. I've given too many years, not to CBS News, sir, please, I'm not that stupid, but to the idea of CBS News, the idea of a place that whether it's owned by Westinghouse or a Viacom or a pack of rabid coon dogs, still maintains a semblance of the standards it was founded on. A place that, no matter who pays its mortgage, still thinks of itself as the house Murrow built.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I have to stay at it a little longer and a little later into life's final segment than Uncle Walter did, and put off the yachting and the golf playing until I'm too old to do it, maybe that's the price I have to pay for keeping that dream alive.
Well, what I'm saying is you could keep it alive doing hard-hitting pieces for 16, and you wouldn't have to spend half your day doing promos for Channel 67 in Western South Dakota.
William, somebody has to keep Eye on America, a living, breathing piece of appointment journalism. Somebody has to care about the reality check and the bottom line, otherwise they're just going to turn into gimmicks like Brother Brokaw's In-Depth and Lifelines.
No.
Yeah, hey, you know, listen, sir.
Mm-hmm.
Just coming back here in D.C. into a real newsroom, a place that breathes the fire of breaking stories and war with press secretaries. I know you see it every day, but it just renews my drive to
go back to that celebrity farm in New York.
Yeah.
Daniel, this game was over the day you let them dye your hair.
On the contrary, sir, this game began the day they let me go gray. I could never win the battle to be glamour boy of the evening news with my dark, brooding kind of good looks. But now it's about trust in an uncertain media environment. And that's a tune I was built to play.
All right, Brother Rather, I am behind you all the way. And please don't ask me to demonstrate that support in any way that our fearless leader would notice, okay?
All right, sir. I'll be off your computer in two shakes of a pig snout.
It's fine. I'm just ordering some wine. I'll use Schieffer's desk. Take it easy, Daniel.
You be good, William. Is concern about the vice president a Cheney reaction? Join me tomorrow at 5:30. Now back to you, Steve and Heather.
Early in the year, Barry White made news when he canceled prematurely his Australian tour, blaming Australia.
Oh, baby. Baby. Just don't feel... just don't feel sexy down here. Can you dig it? Maybe it's just that room service just doesn't seem to have any fries. Oh, baby.
Whatever it is, it's lacking that fizz. Can't get it up. Can't get it up down under. Oh, yeah. Baby, it hurts my soul, hurts my soul. But I can't do my rolling thunder. Can't get it up. Can't get it up down under. Oh, no, I should have brought my chef, yeah. Oh, that was a blunder. Oh, oh, I like to set the mood, but I gotta have some food. Baby, what good are your satin sheets without a spread of luncheon meats? Oh, can't get it up, can't get it up down under. Oh, oh, it hurts my soul, my soul. But I can't do my rolling thunder. Oh, fuck a barbecue, that would be my wish. Only barbecue down here is fish. Baby, I'm still sexy inside my head. But it won't look that way till I get fed. Oh, I've been to Sydney, baby. I've been to Melbourne. I may never make it to Perth. I'm just trying to play my music for the people, baby. But they kept telling me catering was setting something up for me backstage. So
So which way was I supposed to be looking?
Whatever it is, it's hurting my biz. Oh, can't get it up. Can't get it up down under. Oh, no. You know every little thing I do. It's strictly from hunger, baby. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I can't get it up. Can't get it up down under. Oh,
I'm gonna rest a while, baby.
Well, some of us got fed this year, those of us who have hungered for so long to have our own personal copies of some of the Nixon tapes, tapes that Richard Nixon recorded while he was in the White House. For so long, they'd been sequestered by insistence of the Nixon estate, which was fighting with the National Archives. But in April of this year, finally, the order went out that you could go on the Internet or call them up and order your own copies of the Nixon tapes. Formerly, you had to go to the library in suburban Washington and hear them there. But now you can get your own personal copies. And it stimulated a reaction, which we captured on one of the tapes that we have access to from Nixon in heaven.
Where the hell is Haldeman? Because I shouldn't say that. I know he's not in hell.
Just getting some briefing papers.
Hey.
Even up here, there's a line that kink goes.
You just have to wonder, how long do you have to be here before you get your own copy machine?
Yep. Hard to figure.
Hard to figure.
Yeah. Suppose they're testing us, you know.
Yep.
Probation type.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fine. That's their right, of course, you know.
Oh, sure.
I mean, you know, they own the place. Mm-hmm. So, look, you know about the tapes.
The people can go in there and get copies of
them. Yeah. So we authorize that? No, I mean...
We couldn't prevent it. The state fought it for years.
No, I know that, but...
No, I mean, ultimately, I think it was First Amendment or...
Well, sure. Yeah. First Amendment, huh?
Yeah.
That's what the Jews always yell, isn't it? First Amendment this, and, you know, before you know it, it's First Amendment that.
Well, you know.
It was a Jewish fellow suing, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so.
Friend of Ellsberg's?
No. No. Uh-huh. No.
And we know this for a fact.
Best we can tell, they don't all know each other.
Yeah. No. Of course they don't. No. I mean, you want to stay around a long time... You have to operate in cells.
I guess.
So, look, how do we, what do we, how do we deal with this? You know?
Well.
You're just going to let people come in and copy the tapes?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'm thinking of you and some of the things you may have said.
Well, a lot of it was just, you know, brainstorming.
Yeah, oh, sure. But, so, you know, that's why you need context.
Yeah.
I mean, some hippie who comes in and just copies off half a cassette, and all he wants to do is sock it to us, you know.
Yeah.
Like you know, like the kids say, he just wants to yank our bippy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so
not limited to serious usage at all.
Nope.
Scholars and such.
No. Yeah. Even journalists.
Yeah. This place really has mellowed you.
Yeah. It's principle to think, you know.
Yeah, well.
But. This setup, this is just
willy-nilly,
what have you type.
Well, it's anarchy is what it is.
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it is.
Well.
But, you know, what do you expect? I mean, wasn't one of our judges on the case.
No, it wasn't.
So there you are.
Yeah.
Game's over right there. So we need Hoover in on this operation.
You're talking about Gemstone 2?
Yeah. Well, Mitchell did a little work on it on his computer.
Uh-huh.
He's calling it Gemstone 2.1, but whatever.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Hoover knows about it?
Well, he knows how to pull it off.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's our man.
Huh?
I think we need to use someone who's still alive.
Look. You fly a squadron of low-altitude aircraft over this place in Maryland where they're keeping the tapes. Mm-hmm. You have them hover while powerful electromagnets on board are activated to erase all the tapes. Mm-hmm. You don't do that without a goddamn J. Edgar Hoover running the show.
No, I know.
I mean, you know, that's just, you know.
Dirty Tricks 101.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. Still not sure about it.
Whatever. You know, they can't trace it to us. Well, and so what if they do? You know, what are they going to do, impeach us? I mean, we learned that during that stupid little period where I was talking about the idea of suicide. No, you can't impeach a dead person.
Well, I think the point was it wasn't covered by the Constitution.
No, if it's not in, it's out.
Well, I mean,
no, that's just basic rules of strict construction.
No, I know.
You can't do it. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, if we're going to put this plan into operation.
Right, just brainstorming again.
The money is here.
We have the funds?
Yep. No problem.
Was it huge?
Not more. No.
Well, I'm still not sure we want to do this. I mean,
no.
We really do know that we can get magnets powerful enough to erase the tapes from the air?
No, you're right. You're right. Mm. Let's just become the butt of the Johnny Carsons and the Merv Griffins and so forth all over again.
No, I don't think that's going to happen.
No, of course not. Why should it?
Well,
they don't need me to kick around anymore. They got this this Bush kid. You know, his old man was as weak as a girl, but at least he didn't screw up our China situation. But this kid...
I hear Henry won't even talk to him.
Oh, no. No, I heard it was he who wouldn't talk to Henry.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, anyway...
Yep, good question.
We want to move on this?
What do you think? Too risky? Because...
I think we have to weigh the value of the operation against, against the convenience of getting our own copy machine.
Yep. Cost-benefit type deal.
That's right.
All right, let's sleep on it.
I'll call Hoover just in case. Yeah. Give him a heads up.
Sure, up to speed.
Yep.
And then we'll see.
Right.
Yeah. Because, you know, it's...
No.
The magnets these days, you know, it's like the drugs. They're a lot stronger than they used to be.
Yep.
Well, Stanley Kubrick might not have predicted it, but 2001 was a year of many life and death news stories. In May, Timothy McVeigh was on his way to execution. Of course, any execution, even that of Timothy McVeigh, convicted of... the biggest mass murder in American history up till September 11th was fraught with controversy. And one of the sidelights of the controversy was the composer who composed a specially created fanfare, classical fanfare, designed to send him, Timothy McVeigh, to his death. The composer, David Woodard, from right here in Southern California, thank you very much, saw him as an amazing, albeit misguided, talent. And who wouldn't identify with that? The title of the piece, Ave Atque Vale, is translated as Onward Valiant Soldier, or Hail and Farewell. Of course, after that was announced, McVeigh got a one-month stay in his sentence, after which another classical composer penned a more appropriate composition.
30 more days for your lawyers to stall, for you to converse with Gore Vidal. 30 more days for the TV crews to wait while you prepare to meet your fate. 1 month to live and it sounds so sweet. 1 month more of prison meals to eat. Free cable TV, oh say can you see? 1 month to live. For screw-ups by the FBI. 1 month to live and maybe much more. A primetime line just to spread the load. And some cable TV, thank you, Louis Free. For 1 month to live. 30 more days to spread the word, to say children should be buried in debris and not heard. 30 more days for the show to grow old, while your needle is put on hold. 1 month to live and it's all the same. Killing for revenge is the name of the game. Free cable TV, oh say can you see? 1 month to live. 1 month to live.
This is Le Show from the Edge of America, from the home of the homeless, from the Le Show Dome. And we're saluting 2001, a year in rebuke. Of course, just the first half of the year up till September 11th. We'll get to the rest of it right after the holiday. And I mentioned this is a year in which, even before September 11th, there was a lot of news about life and death. And big story in August was what the Bush administration's policy was going to be regarding federal aid to scientists who engaged in stem cell research. Now, as you recall, the president came down with a decision that apparently there were some 60 existful lines of stem cells. These were embryos that had already been created and that could be replicated and apparently perpetuated, at least for a while. And they were okay, but the policy of the federal government was that no more such embryos could be created for the purpose of harvesting. It's a nice way of looking at it. Harvesting stem cells for possible medical uses. And the debate, although we're not privy to it necessarily in the news every day, the debate does rage on.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Up to Here. Up to Here, CPR's once-over, not-so-lately, of the events and people that fly over and under the radar of the week's news. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. This week, word leaked out of the Bush administration that HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson was preparing to issue a new regulation declaring that unborn children would now be eligible for medical care under a federal program designed to assist poor women and children. Unborn children, a supporter of the move said, are children too. While the new rule outraged pro-choice critics, for some on the other side, it's just the beginning. CPR's very special correspondent Aviva Schlorman spoke this week to the head of a new proactive organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Unborn People.
Elizabeth Belchays is a child of the civil rights movement. Her father, Andy, marched in Selma, was a freedom rider in Mississippi before becoming executive vice president of Revlon. For Elizabeth, who trained as an attorney in Chicago and now lives here in Washington, unborn rights is a civil rights issue.
Aviva, we take the HHS secretary seriously when he says that UPs,
meaning unborn people,
that they have the right to federally supported medical care. I think we're at a stage where we're just beginning to discover just how many rights the unborn person really has.
Elizabeth, when you say rights, mm-hmm. I think the first thing that comes to my mind is the right to vote.
Spoken like a true NAAUP-er, Aviva.
Actually, the only organization I belong to is a Thoreau-influenced gardening club.
Mm-hmm. But we believe that the reason this issue has been ignored for so long is very simple. Unborn people represent potentially one of the largest voting blocks in our country.
Mm.
Can you think of what it would go through a politician's mind if he had to defend an anti-unborn voting record to...
And here we come to it, don't we, Miss Belchase? To a what? There couldn't be campaign meetings with groups of UPs or even television...
Or even television campaign commercials. And wouldn't that be a bad thing to have an entire part of the voting population who couldn't see those? Seriously, Ms. Schlorman, There are already very sophisticated ways of communicating sounds to unborn people. You know that when they get the vote, a lot more research money is going to be devoted to communicating with them, if for no other reason than to be able to tabulate their votes. And that's a good thing.
What other rights are on your agenda for those awaiting birth?
Well, vested rights under federal and state entitlement programs, unemployment, disability, fair housing, small business loan guarantees.
Oh, now, surely, Miss Belchase, no fetus in his right mind is going to be applying for an SBA loan to open a sunglass hut.
Well, first, as you may have noticed, we refer to our constituents as unborn people, not fetuses or children. The first term trivializes their existence. The second term politicizes it. It gets it involved in the whole abortion discussion. What they are, bottom line, is persons. Little, unborn persons who happen to live inside other persons. And whether or not they choose to exercise one or another of their rights is irrelevant to the issue that they should have those rights. I mean, if I decide to stay quiet for a weekend, I don't necessarily thereby lose my right to free speech.
I assume that's a hypothetical.
Of course.
But aren't all these proposals for unborn people's rights really a way of setting a precedent trap for abortions? I mean, if these people have all these new rights, then it would follow that surely you can't abort them.
Ms. Schloman, all I can tell you is we get no funding, direct or indirect.
Hypothetical.
Of course.
But aren't all these proposals for unborn people's rights really a way of setting a precedent trap for abortions? I mean, if these people have all these new rights, then it would follow that surely you can't abort them.
Ms. Schloman, all I can tell you is we get no funding, direct or indirect, from the pro-life movement. We respect them. I hope they respect us, but we're not as interested in the consequences that may or may not flow from reform than in the idea of social justice itself. After all, did my father's peers in the civil rights movement stop to consider that what they were doing would eventually pave the way for Oprah and Bryant Gumbel? I don't think so.
Well, that leads with almost uncanny continuity to my next question. Your organization's name bears a marked similarity to...
to the NAACP. I've heard that.
And to the NCAA, but principally, yes, to the NAACP. Have you gotten any reaction from them?
We have. The attorneys are trying to work it out as we speak. I don't think, legally speaking, that there's any more similarity between our names than between, let's say, the American Medical Association and the American Rifle Association.
Just one word.
Just one word.
What about the right to drive a car?
Well, in every state I know about, it's a privilege, not a right.
But you do advocate an unborn person's right to sue.
Oh, we certainly do. Whether it's the manufacture of an ultrasound scanner that may zap a UP with an overdose of radiation or a mother who smokes crack cocaine. Of course, the only person who's really in a position to have speedy recourse to a legal remedy is the unborn person, him or herself. As a matter of fact, I mean, the only right that we really haven't taken a position on yet is the unborn person's right to die. That's, to us, that's a tricky one.
Your father marched in pursuit of a dream. What's your dream?
Well, his dream is now a lipstick that looks wet for up to 18 hours, but... but my dream is a world in which unborn people can take their rightful place, where a person is treated equally, regardless of race, creed, national origin, or state of birthfulness. What we have to acknowledge, Aviva, as a nation, is that for far too long we have been a birthist society, and changing the laws is just part of the larger job of changing our hearts.
Elizabeth Belchase, thanks for spending this time with us.
I regarded it more as an investment. Thank you.
I'm Aviva Schlorman in Washington.
The approach of baseball's All-Star Game is a bittersweet time for commentator Bixby Knowles.
I shoved my gloved arm halfway up a hepatitic calf this week. I came face to face with myself. Mortality stared at me like a tourist through that animal's eyes, and I knew summer was half over. All-star games mean that here in Wyoming. They signal it's time to start to prepare for fall. There are sheep to inoculate against pink ear, swine that need their teeth cleaned. When the All-Star teams are announced, while other fans think of green outfields, I think of a goat that must be fitted with a truss before the first snow. Plenty of time for joy next summer. This one's almost over.
Bixby Knowles is a large animal poet and free verse veterinarian who lives in Cody, Wyoming. He comes to us from member station KIOU. And for this week, you're up to here. We had help this week from the Clevenger Foundation for coverage of stories the Clevenger Foundation really likes. I'm Milton Getzler, inviting you to join us the next time we get up to here. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
In the media world this year, there were some noteworthy events. This was the year. This will go down, in at least in the memories of people in the radio business, as the year that Paul Harvey lost his voice and Rush Limbaugh lost his hearing. And for the rest of us, it was the year that William Shatner lost his job as spokesperson for Priceline.com.
Are you ready, boys? This one's the keeper. The problem is all inside your head, he said to me. I said, for an agent, you talk too much of sensitivity. Is there something we can threaten? He said, just listen to me. There must be 50 ways to leave your sponsor. He said, you're still getting paid your princely sum, so it would be unseemly to denounce these folks as scum. They've replaced you with a sexy girl. You better learn to come to see the 50 ways to leave your sponsor. Just make out a will, Bill. Get a new job, Bob. Fire the band, Van. Set yourself free. Try to get a big part, Bart. Direct your own film, film. Write a short book, Schnook. Do it for free. Oh, he said, it grieves me so to see you feel such shame after all you've done to build up the reputation of the name. But people will remember you even if the spots were lame. So use the 50 ways to leave your sponsor. I said, being replaced by a sexy girl on pay TV just isn't what I thought of as the way it's supposed to be. Was it my toupee, my ex-wife's death, or was it simply me? He said, 50 ways to leave your sponsor. 50 ways to leave your sponsor. Just say that you quit, wit, that we fought about dojo. Say you've got too much to do, Lou, you've set yourself free. Say that company's jive, Clive, that you hated the boss, hoss. Or say nothing at all, Paul. Just set yourself free. Oh, Priceline and I used to be like this. Naming your own price seemed so cool. But after the head guy quit and the stock became more worthless than a Leonard Nimoy script, well, let them renew my contract. Ha! Don't make me mind meld. Just go on a trip, Flip. Work on a new act, Jack. Stay out of the pool, Buell. You're working for free. Get into a play, Jay. Write some new memoirs, Lars. Record a CD, Lee. Just set yourself free.
It's almost hard to remember now, but the big story of the early summer of May, June, July was a story about an intern that was who was not Monica Lewinsky. And we still have no idea The story is as big a mystery now as it was then, but of course, who cares? Nonetheless, when summer struck and the cable news channels were desperate for a running story, this is the one they ran with.
From MSNBC, Reasonable Doubt, Law, Lawyers, and the Law. It's like Burden of Proof without that woman. Here is legal commentator and commentating lawyer, Jerry Spence.
Well, it's been 90 days or so since Chandra Levy went from the back rooms of the Capitol to the front porch of American cable television. And now, like some inner tube floating in the swimming hole, the tragic story of this young girl's mysterious disappearance seems to be running out of air. No clues, no witnesses, no suspects, no press conferences, with the noble and notable exception of the poor girl's parents. Is it time to stick a fork in this one and move on, or can we realistically expect to harvest another month or so of plausible chit-chat out of the legal, political, and let's just get on our highest horses here, moral implications of this case? With me today are three attorneys who are always delighted to take a chunk out of their billable hours to come on television and dispense free advice. In New York, the great criminal lawyer, now moving exclusively into civil practice, Johnny Cochran. In Miami, the distinguished defense attorney and, if you believe the feds, attempted embezzler of the government, F. Lee Bailey. And in our Washington studio is the only attorney on television who plays the hair card as flamboyantly as I do, the great conservative Lightning Rod Ann Coulter. Well, Johnny, is the Chandra Levy story over? And if so, whose fault is it?
Jerry, let me tell you, first of all, who not to blame.
All right.
And that's Washington, D.C. Police Department. Now, you know me, Counselor. You know I'm not exactly the poster boy for support your local police. But there is a member of Congress involved here.
Yes.
And the police budget is controlled by Congress. And if I wanted bullets in my patrolman's guns next year, I might let the congressman's attorney roll me a little bit, too.
So they've let the trail go cold.
Called it on a delicatessen turkey. Called it on a Stoli Frappuccino, Jerry.
Lee Bailey, does the public lose interest when the actual news content of the story approaches zero?
But I don't think it has to. Could we not, if we desired, step back and lavish greater time and attention on the larger issues implicit in this case? Issues like, our lawyers on television often enough? Just, for an example.
Well, how about, why can't Democrats keep their hands off their interns?
Well, Ann Coulter, you see the double tragedy, the possible death of the story and of the girl herself, as a political issue?
Jerry, I see the size of Larry King's shoulder pads as a political issue. That's my job. But if the story dies, the person who deserves to bear the brunt of the responsibility is this Democrat congressman who seems to believe that the best way to service his constituents is horizontally.
Now, you see, Jerry, and because I've been a talk show host myself, I can see the value here. Getting back to the topic, I think there's a good 2 or 3 weeks more in the question of whether we're being fair to Congressman Condit.
Fair? The man should be strung up by his Calvin Klein bikini briefs. But to directly answer Johnny Cochran's question, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm available all through August to keep this up.
Lee, if we are at the point where blame is to be assigned...
Jerry, I don't think we ever left that point.
All right, fair enough. But do we in the media shoulder some of the blame for this story's attenuated shelf life?
Look, I think the media are always to blame when something like this happens. That's, if you will, is it not one thing that does give a Chandra Levy story added heft is just the ability to turn around when all else fails, as it's doing here, and take the time to discuss our own culpability. That's a very important part of this discussion, and we are we not in the very best position to do so.
Well, but Lee, the media were basically doing the bidding of the Levies. You know, they're the ones who held more press conferences in 3 months than George W. Bush has held in his whole life. I think what you have here is the media acting in a very exploitative, a sensationalistic way, to be sure, but doing so for the very best of motives.
Well, and the ratings for all the news channels have gone up this summer, and all the executives say it's not just the Chandra Levy story. Is that smoke being blown up our rear ends, or is it just naturally foggy back there?
Jerry, I think the ability of people like myself and Barbara Olson and even Laura Ingraham to get back on television is good for women. It's good for conservatives. It's good for women conservatives. So
if you were here to discuss, I don't know, embryonic stem cell research...
Fine, no problem. I think any attorney who can't do the heavy lifting necessary to have a strongly held opinion on a given topic on a moment's notice, you know, just doesn't belong on television.
Some of us are here, I should remind the good lady, on the sheer power of our charisma.
Well, that's very fine, but I can't let what Mr. Cochran said earlier about the police go completely unanswered. I mean, this is a police force that decided that the way to get crackheads off the street was to give them guns and put them in uniforms, so...
Jerry, I've been waiting for 7 years to say this, but now who's playing the race card?
Well, these are exactly the kind of sparks we'd all love this story to continue to strike. I want to thank my guest today for tackling the question of how to keep tackling the question. I'm Jerry Spence. Join us next time for more Reasonable Doubt.
Reasonable Doubt was a production of MSNBC. We're the headliners and legends, people.
And finally, there was a story about, and this was as this is as rare as cod tongues. There was a story about a man in Utah who actually was busted and convicted of polygamy. Now, of course, in the old days, that was, I believe, state law. You were required to be polygamous. But, you know, they were trying to have the Winter Olympics and the Utah Jazz and just clean up the act of the Beehive State generally. So all of a sudden, this guy out in sort of the wilderness there was found, located, and prosecuted and convicted. I believe he had 3 or 4 wives. Now, of course, jail is an unfortunate consequence, but there may be more positive results yet to come.
Love and marriage, love and marriage.
Marriage with children was never like this.
Hey, sweetheart, what's for dinner?
Meatloaf. Pizza.
Would you believe frozen waffles?
Yakov Brown is a regular guy with a regular job and a beautiful wife.
Mr. Brown, welcome to the PTA.
Thank you. What an association.
Yes, and this must be...
I'm Brittany.
And a beautiful wife.
I'm Whitney.
And a beautiful wife.
I'm Brandishwa. How you doing, girl?
Three may be company, but four is definitely a crowd. From the creators of the Don Imus Late Night Pilot comes a show that takes family comedy where it's never been before.
Well, good night, honey.
Good night, dear.
Good night, darling.
Yo, sugar, where's the remote?
Yakov Smirnoff is Yakov Brown. Tori Spelling makes her comedy debut as wife number one. Supermodel Shalail Ban is wife number two. And Brandy is Brandishwa.
Do you have the batteries? I thought you did.
Hey, girlfriends, shh, don't wake him up.
And if you do, please let me watch. What a marriage.
Honey, 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 I'm home. Polygamy gets an attitude, because this fall, everything's Fox. Too much passion is not enough.
Thank you.
ladies and gentlemen, that would be 2001, right up to the day when everything's changed. And we'll look at the rest of the year in rebuke, as I said, in a couple of weeks here on the show. But that'll put the stopper back in the bottle on this week's edition of the broadcast. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations. Over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USN 440 cable system in Japan. Around the world through the Armed Forces Network. On shortwave, for goodness sake, at WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz on your shortwave dial. And then in another century, around the North American continent on XM satellite radio. And on your computer, whenever you want it, around the world at two locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like everything not having changed if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? All righty. Thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show Internet Services by Steve Mack. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.